Doing great. I wanted to thank, first of all, Searle Institute, and I wanted to thank my longtime mentor, Professor Alan Ingelson, for bringing me on board for many years now with Searle seminars and Saturday at the Morning Law School seminars. I think it's a fantastic idea to do something productive on a Saturday morning and to, acquire information and to disseminate information, which is always exciting with respect to the law. And I'm going to try my best today to reveal some of the developments in Alberta and in Canada in general with respect to renewables. I wanted to thank Catherine, of course, for moderating today, and the University of Calgary Faculty of Law. I notice we have a few participants here, Al Lucas is one of them. I've known Professor Lucas for a long time, and I thank him for coming on board as well. I got tremendous support from the Faculty of Law and from the University of Calgary, and I'm looking forward to this seminar. And to all of you who have joined on this Zoom session, I wanted to thank you for joining. And I promise to make it somewhat entertaining and to kind of make you realize that the world is changing with respect to energy. And so, welcome to all of you. And I will start with the presentation by showing you a little bit of the outline, what we're going to be discussing. First of all, the news and just some of the latest developments in 2020 with respect to renewables. In Alberta, but you'll notice that the news is connected to other jurisdictions as well. I will dwell a little bit on wind energy and solar energy as prime examples of how renewables are developing in this country. Then I will get into the more specific current projects in Alberta, dwelling upon not only the projects in general, but the very specific information. Particularly with legal issues, right? Then that will, allow us to go into policy and law, which I'm not going to dwell upon too much as we have a limited time today, but that is something that is huge in creating a regulatory framework for and the foundation for everything that that takes place in the energy sector. And then, of course, I'll give you my thoughts, my 2 cents, which, well, we don't use pennies anymore, but I guess they're a collector's item now. But I will give you my thoughts in the end. So, to get going, the latest news out of Edmonton is that they're going to build a very large solar farm. And this solar farm is something that is going to arrive probably in a couple of years from now. 2022 is the set date where they're going to be building a solar farm just near the airport. For those of you who have been visiting Edmonton over the years, we usually see it on the left-hand side when we're approaching Edmonton going north on Highway 2. And so there's a huge development occurring there for about 120 megawatts. And this is enough to power about 30,000 homes. It's going to actually be constructed on the west side as part of an agreement with Alpen Sun, which is a European renewable energy company. And this would feed into FortisAlberta and the airport. This project is supposed to create about 120 jobs, with up to 250 estimated jobs at its peak. So this is coming up very soon. This news was out of the Edmonton Journal as of July of this year. Very exciting developments, and there are a lot of these types of projects coming up in Alberta and in many parts of Canada with respect to large energy-based projects. And if you look at some of the even the smaller towns like Vulcan Solar Farm in Vulcan County, that is the village of Lomond. They also are building a solar farm with about $500 million investment from Denmark-based investment group, Copenhagen Infrastructure Partners. And this is something that is in lieu of many of the Calgary-based renewable energy companies. And there are, as I'll mention later on, there is a tremendous growth in the number of renewable energy companies in Calgary, being the energy capital of Canada. We are transitioning quite nicely from oil and gas into renewables, and I'll talk more about that later on. But this is a very exciting solar energy project in smaller towns, agrarian communities, and this is about a 400 megawatt project to power about 100,000 homes, so it's even bigger than the Edmonton project. And it's very exciting to see this type of investment coming into Alberta, given the first of all, COVID-19 pandemic, secondly, the downturn in the oil and gas economy, and just the rapid fluctuations in the industry. And when you look at the players in renewable energy, you can see and appreciate the fact that there are lenders involved like RBC. RBC is getting involved with various companies like Bullfrog and Blue Earth Renewables, two companies that have a solid base in Canada. And they have entered into agreement, what's called a power purchase agreement, PPAs. And this is actually, as you can see on that the green map that I've provided for you, is just south of Medicine Hat. Sweetgrass, of course, is right here at the U.S. border. And so this is, deeply into southern Alberta. There's a fair chunk of land that they're actually dealing with respect to this power purchase agreement. The reason why I put this on the slide is to demonstrate that lending institutions, financial institutions, are getting involved quite heavily with these projects. When you look at Alberta, there's also another interesting development with respect to nuclear technology. And nuclear technology, nuclear reactors have been a subject of attention in Alberta for quite a long time, actually. And in the Peace River region, they were pondering the issue of whether or not to introduce nuclear reactors, nuclear energy into Alberta. Alberta, of course, is a fossil fuel-based economy with oil and gas. There are a few jurisdictions in Canada that deal with nuclear energy, Ontario, for example, and some of the Atlantic provinces. But with respect to Alberta, we've never had nuclear energy. There have been proposals back in the 50s and 60s with respect to nuclear energy being generated to deal with the bitumen underground. But that never really developed. And even when at the time when Ralph Klein, our former premier, when he was approached by various investors to start nuclear energy, they did not move ahead with that. It was just not the right time for it. But now Alberta is thinking about developing what's called SMRs, or small modular reactors. And this is something that is essentially a smaller version of a nuclear, traditional nuclear reactor. These are fission reactors that are much smaller than the traditional reactors we see. They're usually good for small grids, anything where power generation is less than 300 megawatts or anything off grid. And there is, of course, a huge challenge with respect to energy in the rural sector and the agrarian communities. Any communities that are off grid from, say, the big cities. In the big cities, we're kind of spoiled, aren't we? We have everything. We have there's a lot of population, a lot of demand, and so there are tremendous resources at our disposal. But when you live in a smaller community, even internet connection is difficult sometimes. And so they have been proposing this idea where these SMRs, or small modular reactors, can be used for very specific purposes, including district heating. It could be dealing with the production of hydrogen fuel, desalination of drinking water, And when you look at the Canadian regulatory landscape for nuclear energy, we do have the Nuclear Safety and Control Act, which kind of guides, that's federal legislation that guides all nuclear activities in Canada. It is closely monitored, and usually the SMRs are classified as what's called Class 1A nuclear facilities under the Class 1 Nuclear Facility Regulations of Canada. It's interesting because Natural Resources Canada, a federal agency, has actually developed a roadmap and a dialogue, a very constructive dialogue with the provinces and the territories back in 2017 and 2018. And they had this dialogue to introduce the idea of SMRs and whether or not this can help energy generation, distribution, and retailing of energy. And of course, we do have a few jurisdictions dealing with nuclear power, but most of Canada is not nuclear. And so it's one of those things, a very interesting question arises that given these developments and given the fact that Alberta may introduce SMRs, what interplay will that take place with renewables? Because if you're dealing with renewable energy in small communities, it is possible to tie in energy generation that's essentially clean, but will it connect with or integrate with renewables? Now, the obvious issue with nuclear energy is that people are worried about safety. With Fukushima and, you know, in the old days, we've had Chernobyl, Bhopal, India, Union Carbide way back in the 80s. We've had these issues of nuclear disasters. And I think that is not only a political issue, it's an economic issue, social issue as well. And that's what's kept nuclear energy at bay. France, for example, has been using nuclear energy as well as Japan for decades. So we'll see how Canada fits into the scheme of things, particularly Alberta, to see whether this oil and gas renewables jurisdiction adds another piece of the pie to its portfolio. So it'll be very interesting to see that. With respect to wind energy, and I hope I'm not rushing too quickly here, wind energy is something that, along with solar energy, has taken off in Alberta for a long time. And since the 90s, wind energy has been actually quite active in this jurisdiction. A lot of people associate Alberta with just oil and gas, not realizing that we've had wind energy for a long time. And when you look at oil jurisdictions like even Texas, Oklahoma, for example, that's where I studied law. These jurisdictions are oil and gas jurisdictions, but they've had wind energy for quite a bit of a period. And you can see from this diagram how wind energy works. I'm not going to get into the scientific explanation. With respect to wind energy, you can see that with wind turbines connecting to various substations, and then of course the community distribution energy of energy is very, very important. And the transmission and retailing are very, very critical to getting that energy to the communities that need them. But as you'll see, wind energy is actually not just in outlying areas, it's also within urban areas as well. When you look at wind capacity in Canada, in terms of megawatts, you can see that this is capacity. Of course, this is not generation, but this is capacity. And you can see Alberta is number three here with respect to our capacity. Southern Alberta, actually, if you look at some of the wind maps of Canada, Southern Alberta has one of the highest wind capacities in all of Canada, including Quebec and Ontario. So we are a fairly windy province, particularly in the southern end of our province. But all the other provinces, of course, have some capacity, but that's contingent upon technology, government policy and law, how much support you get legislatively. But there's also the question of investments as well. Who is involved in generating wind energy in Canada. So if you look at a comparative analysis of some of the key provinces, Alberta, Ontario, and Quebec, you have, these are the three biggest producers of wind, okay? And you can see here, there's, you know, this is from Canway. The source is Canway. We have about 38 projects in Alberta, which is, it's actually more now, because these are slightly older statistics. And, but you can see here, you know, close to 1,000 wind turbines. In Ontario, you have 2,600 and 1,990 in Quebec. Quebec, of course, is known for its hydropower, and that is the largest source of renewable energy in Quebec. In fact, that's the largest source of renewable energy in Canada, is hydropower. And so when you integrate it with wind energy, you can see these jurisdictions are very active. And as I mentioned, Alberta is actually quite known for its wind energy, despite being a fossil fuel-based province. When you look at some of the key projects in Canada, including Alberta, Pincher Creek actually has been at the forefront for many years. And you can see here that I've taken the liberty of showing you some information about this specific Windy Point wind farm, as they call it, which is about 50.4 megawatts, okay? You can see on the left-hand side that there are wind studies and land control issues. This is where the legal issues come into play. When we think about energy in general, people don't think about the legal issues because nobody really reads the law, nor do they care about it. Well, we care about it. And that's why we have to deal with initial studies, environmental assessments, land siting issues, permitting and licenses, dealing with the regulatory framework, administrative agencies in the realm of administrative law, and of course the engineering and design and construction and operation issues. All of these things have to be carefully monitored, and this is a phase by phase development. Things don't happen overnight. You can't just build a wind farm or a solar farm overnight. If you understand the law, particularly with property law issues and whatnot, and contract law and all of these issues, indigenous law issues, you have to carefully go through these phases and generate some kind of interest for investors so they can see that you are following the regulations and the acts. The project map itself, this is where property law becomes a big issue. Who owns the land? Of course, the general principles in property law is that the government owns all the land. The crown owns the land. They issue title to registered owners. The next question is it government owned land? Is it private lands where people can sign, for example, you know, power purchase agreements, royalty agreements, unitization agreements, whatnot. So this is a good map of showing you how Windy Point is developing and in which, you know, in which communities. And the project maps are, of course, essential to see the scope and scale of that particular wind project. And so Windy Point's project map is showing you a little bit about where the siting is going to be located. And this draws attention to the construction stages, which is really important in generating jobs. This is where the jobs really lie with respect to the timeline of various stages of construction, okay? So from project origination to turbine delivery, you can see that it takes time. 2006 to 2019 is a long time, and things don't happen overnight. You have to go through these various stages, okay? And when you look at this beautiful picture of Alberta and the Rocky Mountains, these are typical sites for where wind energy projects take place. And you can see here, there's various regulatory issues that you have to contend with, particularly environmental studies or environmental assessments. There's public consultation, which is huge. If you're dealing with indigenous lands, we're not only talking about public consultations, there are constitutional issues triggered with respect to the duty to accommodate and the duty to consult, okay? And typically that the duty to accommodate includes a direct contribution into the indigenous communities to provide jobs, education, training, and whatnot. But you can see here, things take time. And when you get to the turbine delivery stage, there are tons of jobs that can be generated in this timeline. So it's a very exciting thing to see that wind energy is moving along at a very quick pace. But we also have the history of wind energy in Canada from even the 80s and 90s, especially the 90s. We have a lot of experience with it. And so wind energy is not necessarily new now. It's quite old. That brings us to solar energy. And solar energy, of course, is along with wind energy, these are the two titans of renewable energy. They receive, generally speaking, the most attention and the most support from governments, from investors and whatnot. And that's because of the natural resources that we have in renewables. That's one of the benefits of renewables, is that it's naturally occurring. We don't have to extract, we don't have to survey so much. These are just natural resources. We see these resources provided every single day for free. And so when you look at solar energy, we're dealing with solar panels, we're dealing with inverters and whatnot, and just setting up a basic infrastructure for a home, commercial building, and various communities. Government buildings in Canada often are now using solar panels. The University of Calgary has a demonstration solar home in the middle of the campus just by the engineering building, and many different parts of the University of Calgary and other universities and colleges and even public schools are actually using solar panels to generate energy, okay? So you can see here with the contributions of a solar energy company, what exactly do they do, okay, in terms of designing your individual infrastructure to getting approvals, regulatory approvals, and then installation and then inspection and commissioning, okay? And you can see here on the right-hand side, there are various technical steps to follow with respect to solar installations and use. And solar energy companies are doing this as just services and duties for the average person, either residential owner, could be commercial owners, dealing with universities, colleges, schools, and just government buildings. Many of the solar energy companies are providing very specific technical support and installation services. When you look at the solar energy map of Canada, you can see here in the bottom here, this is a map of Canada where there's a lot of vast potential for solar energy in the western provinces. We have sunlight all over the world, but particularly in southern Alberta, BC, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, you can see that we receive a great deal of solar energy. And if you look at the solar value index, it's about $615. And when you look at all of these statistics about solar capacity, it's showing you that there is incredible potential. Obviously, in the summer months, spring, summer months, you have the most production. But even during winter time, there are solar panels being built in Calgary, for example. Jamin Homes is a good example. It's a developer in Calgary that is now on board with installing solar panels to every new home now. I think the other developers in Calgary will follow. I'm surprised they haven't started this a long time ago. but this is something that they have done. And so you'll see in the future the development of homes in Calgary and commercial buildings, you will see lots of solar panels being used. It's not just a pilot project anymore. For example, in like various communities, you have pilot projects being supported by government, industry, and academia and whatnot. That's not just a pilot project anymore. This is mainstream. And so when you look at the photovoltaic potential in Alberta, you can see this specifically. And Alberta is ranked number 2 in terms of sunlight hours. I thought we were number 1, but then again, I'm biased. I'm from Alberta. We always think we're number 1 in things. We're not number 1 in hockey anymore, that's for sure. But with respect to Saskatchewan, it is actually receiving the most sunlight on average. Okay, these are estimates. Alberta's pretty high up there. And then, but again, when you look at the photovoltaic potential dealing with solar energy, a lot of that potential deals with energy policy and law, how much government support you get, how much investment you get, and all of these things, okay? Technology and technological innovations. But we are at the forefront of solar energy in this province. And of course, when you look at the potential, of course, it's in summertime mostly, but Calgary is very high up there in terms of kilowatt hours per meter squared. When you look at various jurisdictions, you will see in the big cities of Canada, they have tremendous potential, which makes sense because most of us Canadians live in urban environments. What is it, like 85%, 86% of Canadians live in urban centers. We used to be an agrarian community back in the early 1900s in Canada, but of course the world is not only globalized, but it's heavily urbanized. When you look at some of the solar projects in Alberta, you can see here, I've taken the liberty of showing you some nice crisp pictures of different parts of Alberta. Medicine Hat, this is a school. This is an example of a public school using solar energy. They have been using it in the county of Lethbridge on various public buildings, even farming communities, which is quite relevant here. Solar energy and wind energy together, when they're integrated, they provide lots of power for our farmers. And that's because they're located off-grid, no kidding. They're living away from the major urban centers. They don't have access to the public grids. And so it becomes an enormous challenge to provide energy to outlying communities off-grid. How do you do that? If you look at Bassano, which is just by Calgary, you can see a 2-megawatt solar farm, which has taken up space. And this is what the Edmonton Airport project is going to look like, okay, with these vast fields of solar panels being used and installed. And the technology is changing even with solar panels, but with respect to providing basic power, it's a great option, given the fact that these communities are off grid from the main cities. If you look at Strathmore, which is just east of Calgary, you can see even more developments, what's called the Strathmore Solar Farm, which is being proposed on 320 acres of industrial use. So this is an example of commercial land, industrial land being used for energy purposes, okay? And the capital cost of the project is about $60 million, and this is bringing in various sources of jobs into the community and what we call Wheatland County, okay? And this is going to be constructed in, of course, various phases, and it's gonna operate for a period of about 30 years, okay? Typically, these large projects, energy-based projects and renewables, they take a long time to operate. the Pincher Creek wind farms, for example, just south of Calgary, have been providing wind energy to Calgary's LRT system, light rail transit system, for many, many years. Okay. But at some point, these projects can become decommissioned. Okay. And so it's a question of how long is a energy project going to last in a community, subject to renewal, of course. It's not like you have to end simply because of the timeline based on the contract, but you can certainly renew it if there is something worth renewing. Okay. It is possible the investor can leave. It is possible that the community may not support that particular project, but it depends on what you're looking at. In Calgary, the city of Calgary, you have the Genesis Center, which is in the northeast end of the city. And there's also this Genesis Place in Airdrie, which is just north of Calgary. Airdrie, many of my friends live in Airdrie. And one day it's probably going to be swallowed up by Calgary. We're coming close to it. But there is a Genesis Place, 1.51 kilowatt system. With again, you can see the solar panels being installed on the rooftops of the different buildings here. And so this is not just an off-grid issue, farming community issue with respect to solar energy. It's actually coming into the major centers as well and the towns. Speaking of another town, Penhold, Alberta, they've installed already solar panels on their multiplex. And they have, very good prospects in small towns because they're off grid. It's a challenge for many of these small communities to pay high electricity costs. The utility bills are pretty high because they have to get their energy elsewhere. But now that we're moving away from diesel and we're moving into the area of solar energy, you can see here that there is tremendous potential for those communities as well. Okay, with respect to DP Energy in Alberta, when you look at this particular solar project, which is called the Barlow Solar Park, this is in the city of Calgary, in the southeast community that is 130 acres, just north of 114th Avenue. And this is essentially, another example of urban solar farms. And you can see from this picture that it's a very large field within the midst of different communities. But Southeast is heavily industrialized, and that's where a lot of the industry is located. So this particular solar farm is at about 27 megawatts, they're going to be creating. That's enough to power 6,000 households. Okay, so this is a good example of a utility scale solar PV project located in the city of Calgary. This is a fantastic endeavor. And when you look at the legal issues related to utilities, you can see here the Alberta Utilities Commission, AUC, of course, has to provide notice as part of due process. And so when you look at notice of applications, you can see here very specific pieces of information are given for an application for solar power plants, which is the typical regulatory requirement, okay, with many different companies proposing various solar projects. And you can see here in the map, for those of you who live in Calgary, you know where Barlow Trail is, and that's essentially where the solar farm is planning to or going to be installed at some point. So when you look at even malls in Calgary, Seton Mall way down south, southeast, you can see that there are solar panels that are being installed on commercial buildings. So if you're leasing commercial space like these businesses are, then they are drawing their energy, or the landlord is who owns this property, they will draw energy from these solar panels. This is pretty cool concept because we live in that culture of strip malls and whatnot. We always go to the strip mall. But the next question is, in terms of costs, if you have a commercial lease agreement in place with, say, a triple net lease, for example, you know, how are utility costs going to fit into that commercial lease agreement, particularly with landlords who negotiate with their commercial tenants? This is the Calgary West LRT station, which also has, as you can see, 30 kilowatts of solar panels on the surface there. And you're seeing that a lot in different cities around the world. It's not just Canada, but around the world. Many cities have installed solar panels here and there simply because of the solar potential. And because Calgary is very high up there and receiving sunlight, we are taking advantage of that. And so this is the West Light Rail Transit Station that we have in our beautiful city. And you can see that even residential homes with what they call net zero homes are popping up in Calgary all over the place. And you can see here a solar installer putting the panels on. This is actually the future of our world. Most of the homes, if not all of them, will look like this, okay? And I say the word will quite confidently because that is the direction in which people are going. There's also a consumer culture with respect to sustainable energy. People are becoming more and more conscious of the environment. They are willing to move into a net zero home where you're not producing carbon emissions. And this is the area, or the very fascinating area, of green building. And this is something that you're seeing not only in commercial strip malls, like I was just showing you, farming communities, but in our own house. And so residential homes like this one in Calgary, this is an actual green home in Calgary. It's pretty nice looking. I like it. But it's tailored to natural lighting. It's tailored to using the geothermal heat of the earth. It's tailored to sunlight, wind, okay? And even the materials themselves are sustainable, so that there's very little waste and there's a lot of conservation of energy. And energy storage is one of the huge areas in which is quite challenging in research and development. Many of the universities, including the University of Calgary, are researching heavily in how to store energy. When you look at companies like Tesla, when you look at various companies around the world, their main focus is on energy storage. It's not so much generating energy and distributing it, transmitting it, it is also about storing it. So that's the question of, it goes back to the laws of physics and thermodynamics and whatnot, but the laws of conservation of energy, okay? But we are moving towards very, very efficient means of storing energy. This is another example in Banff Town Hall, if any of you have been to Banff, just outside of Calgary. Banff is a unique place because it is in a national park on federal lands, but it's also, it has a town of Banff, which is subject to Alberta law. So it's a very unique place to go to, not to mention beautiful. But with respect to its communities and its commercial buildings and town halls and whatnot, recreation centers, you can see solar panels being installed as well. This is, again, showing up all over the place. There's another solar project in Burdett where, again, I'm just kind of outlining to you, some of the technical work that's required, the regulatory work that is required, where you have the AUC involved, dealing with approvals, permit amendments, development, municipal development permits, and then, of course, the project construction itself, okay? It's expected by April 2021. And again, this is your project map with the township roads shown here. And they actually indicate the capacity of 20 megawatts. This is located, again, in southern Alberta. There is a power purchase agreement with Bullfrog Power, and Royal Bank of Canada. Okay, so these kinds of projects are showing up all over the place. And with respect to, the prospects of solar projects in and around Alberta, you have a lot of government support, as you can see here. It is part of the mainstream regulatory framework. When you look at the town of Viking in Alberta, that was another solar project. Again, you have these fields of solar panels now, which we never saw before in the past. For those of us who were raised in Albertan, we never saw these things. We never even saw wind turbines back in the 80s and 70s and whatnot. So it's a question of how much change is occurring in the Alberta landscape. Just physically, you can see the changes occurring. And this particular project has a connection with a federal municipal climate change action center, as they call it. It's a program which provides funding to municipalities all over Canada. And various cities, various towns, can take advantage of another program called the Alberta Municipal Solar Program to get rebates of up to 30% of total project expenses. So there is an incentive, a financial incentive, to investing in such a project. It's not something that's just cool. It's something that could be profitable. And there is, of course, a means to attract investors through various financial incentives, such as this one, okay? And this contract was awarded to a company out of Edmonton called Dandelion Renewables. And so here they are having a big smile for the photos. So as of today, I threw this in today. I wasn't supposed to, so I breached my promise to the UFC to keep my slides as is. And so I had to throw it in there, though. As of yesterday, September 11th, this is another example of how major companies are investing a lot of money in solar projects. This is a project in the United States near Kansas City, where a very large company, NextEra Energy, which is really on the forefront of solar energy development, they are planning to invest a lot of money in a 500 megawatt project just outside of the city on 3,500 acres of land. And so this is something that is happening not only in Alberta, it's happening all over in different jurisdictions. And it's one of those things that despite our population growth and the pressures on urban environments to create more energy just for business, residential purposes and whatnot, it's very important for companies to get involved in these types of projects because of the incentives I was just talking about, okay? Anyways, how are we doing, Catherine? Did we need to take a break or we're okay?
Really good. We can go till 11 or we can take the break now. It's up to you, really, what you want to do.
Okay. Well, maybe we can ask the audience or...
Why don't we take a break now and then continue at 11 o'clock? And that way you finish your presentation then and we can head into the Q&A session. Does that work?
That's fine. That sounds... Okay.
Well, perfect. So everybody, we will take a 10-minute break and resume at 11. Now's your chance to go grab a coffee and stretch your legs a little bit.
Excuse me. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you didn't fall asleep during the first session. And so we'll continue on with some of the policy and law with respect to, with respect to Alberta's laws. Energy Efficiency Alberta Act, Hydro and Electric Energy Act and whatnot, all the way down to the EPEA. You have a whole assortment of different pieces of legislation that support all of what we've been discussing. And you can see here that many of these statutes were enacted in the early 2000s, not to mention some of them that are a few years back, okay? These are the acts, of course, from the Alberta legislature, which, of course, has subordinate legislation in the regulations. And, of course, those regulations are the enforcement tools of the acts. So with respect to, these individual pieces of legislation, you have a lot of opportunity to attract investors, to encourage even local businesses to get involved with, the surges in renewable trends. And so when you look at, for example, the Renewable Electricity Act of Alberta, you can see various sections with respect to how these acts actually support different energy projects and whatnot. And of course, it starts with the definitions of what is a renewable energy resource, and they have all of them listed here. I haven't spoken about biomass and geothermal, even though that's also available in Alberta and different parts of Canada. I focused primarily on wind and solar on purpose because these are the most active projects. So you can see here that by legislation, the legislative intent is such that the politicians want certain key clauses to be not only supportive of the energy industry, but to indicate various targets. As you see at the bottom here, a target is established that at least 30% of the electric energy produced in Alberta will be produced from renewable sources. Okay, now that's a target. Whether that's achieved or not is dependent on these trends. I think it's going to go beyond the 30% because of the global trends in renewables. I think it's just more economic sense now to invest in renewables. It has been actually for a while, but not particularly in the past because there were fewer incentives. But now you have legislative support. This is a 2016 statute. So you're dealing with specific clauses that were drafted not so long ago. If you were doing business in the 1990s, early 2000s, you didn't really have the benefit of such targets. If you look at some of the regulations in Alberta with respect to renewable fuel standard regulations, you have all kinds of different clauses as well that specify what is renewable blended fuel. And that is particularly the case with the aviation industry. When you have the blending of aviation fuels to lower greenhouse gas emissions. Okay. Now, the next question is, where is that going to go into the future? Because aviation fuel is an enormous cost. So how can we actually deal with blending fuels with what we already supply? Well, the answer is it lies in the legislation with renewable fuels. So the intent is to introduce no less than 5% qualifying renewable alcohol content in such resources. Okay, when you look at biomass, for example, at the bottom, you can see here that it talks about renewable fuel feedstock types with vegetable, plant materials, animal waste. Waste management is a huge industry in the world, and that's becoming even bigger. And they also deal with algae, fungi, and with respect to what's called municipal waste materials. Okay, so there's a lot of regulations in place that standardize what type of targets should be met, and there's very specific information about what those legal definitions are for renewable resources and how they kind of mix in with the oil and gas industry. That's the example of integration that's going on in this country. When you look at renewable energy companies, one of the questions I get a lot in Calgary is, why should I go into renewable energy? What's the point? Okay, it's not something that's new now. It's been around for a while, but why should I invest in this type of a project? Is it something that's just trending upward? Is it a social, cultural aspect to it? Or is it something that is being supported through legislative efforts, through technological innovation, and et cetera. Well, the world has changed. And one of the things I indicated in my past lectures way back in 2016, when I was a very young man, I predicted in my class that Calgary would become the green energy capital of Canada. And people were looking at me like I was from Mars. Okay. And that's because this trend is not just a trend anymore. This is commonplace. This is part of our general practice of doing energy. Okay. When you look at the renewable energy companies in Alberta, Edmonton, Calgary, they're mostly based in Calgary, but some are in Edmonton. Look at all these companies. Okay. And I haven't listed all of them. These are just some of them. And more engineers, geologists, geophysicists, professionals in general, are going into these companies, okay, particularly those who've been laid off. With respect to energy certificates, you look at various colleges, institutes, universities, there is a tremendous growth in renewable energy education in terms of courses, the design of programs. Even at the graduate level, you're seeing more and more sustainable energy, which of course the University of Calgary is known for, okay? And so with respect to these companies, these are the places of employment. And I think when you look at the media in general, they tend to downplay things. And it's unfortunate because the reality, the economic reality, is that you have these companies in place and they're growing. And so, back to my prediction in 2016, will Calgary become the green energy capital of Canada? Well, we're moving towards it. We may not become the capital, but it's really the question of cities becoming the same as Calgary. So there is that conformity that it's always there. But look at all these companies that you can deal with on an everyday basis. And 10 years ago, 20 years ago, a lot of these companies didn't exist. That's a great sign of opportunity in our economy. And if you look at Alberta's GHG emissions profile, this is several years ago. This is about 5 years ago, but this is the best I could get with respect to the trends. Okay, and I picked 2015 on purpose because this is actually changing now, and this has changed. Okay, when we look at carbon emissions in Alberta, we look at the fact that 48% comes from our heavy industry, okay? The other 17 coming from electricity generation, buildings and homes. This is where the green building concept becomes particularly relevant. 12% transportation. You probably know about electric vehicles now and concepts like renewable hydrogen. That's becoming very big as well. But these are the sources of emissions. And you can actually transplant that to the rest of Canada. They're kind of like this, with the exception of the oil sands and oil and gas component. Okay. Other provinces are similarly situated. Okay. And when you look at the projected changes in Alberta, from 2017 to 2040, this is from the Canada Energy Regulator website, you can see here that the big block of coal, okay, which is just a few years back, it is, of course, diminishing. And the pie for the orange part, natural gas, is actually growing. So there's more potential in natural gas, which is one of those things that contributes to lower GHG emissions. There's still emissions, but it's a lower content of it. And look at wind. Wind is almost doubling. Okay. You know, with respect to solar, okay, you have solar growing as well. And in the middle, you have biomass and you have hydro as well. Okay. It seems to me that hydro is consistent, it's not really growing. And that's because hydro is already a major renewable source. As I mentioned, the largest renewable energy source in Canada is hydropower. And you can thank many of the provinces like Quebec for and BC for getting into hydropower and dealing with that. When you look at current trends and tech innovations, this is something that I would like to draw attention to, because this is where the future is going. Renewable hydrogen is the next big thing. And green hydrogen is something that is going to be absolutely huge. And realizing that hydrogen is the oldest element in the universe, at least according to the laws of physics. So when you're dealing with hydrogen, and then of course it's buddy helium, these were the first two elements that were created in under the Big Bang theory, that you have hydrogen available everywhere. Now, hydrogen, of course, combines with other elements to form various compounds. Water, of course, is the essence of life. But when you use green hydrogen for energy purposes, that's something that, surprisingly, for many years hasn't been dealt with, but now it's being dealt with. So when you start from the basics of electrolysis and you go into the production of hydrogen to lower the carbon emissions and draw more cleaner sources of energy, hydrogen can be used for energy storage, the issue I was talking about earlier. It can decarbonize not only the transportation sector, with all the vehicles, planes, trains, automobiles, but you can also decarbonize industrial processes. Manufacturing comes to mind, with all the factories that we where we produce goods, okay? And then, of course, there are the fuel cell vehicles coming on board. When you look at fuel cells, that's another major investment going on in the world. It's not only trending, it's becoming commonplace. Many universities and research institutes are researching fuel cells and fuel cell technology, and the governments are getting on board very, very quickly with respect to that. So when you look at the basics of fuel cells and how it works, okay, well, it's, I'm not going to go through the entire thing, but essentially hydrogen is being utilized through chemical purposes and to produce energy in the form of heat and electricity. When you blend hydrogen with natural gas, which is something that is happening in Alberta, it's happening in all the provinces, really. That's one of the things about, excuse me, that's one of the things about hydrogen is that it blends very well with other compounds, okay? And that's in an effort to meet those emission reduction targets. That's the reason why they're doing these things. So if you look at Emissions Reduction Alberta, which is a provincial agency, it has invested $2.8 million towards this blending hydrogen with natural gas project, okay? And various companies like ATCO are involved in that. When you look at hydrogen in general, it is a major player in reducing any kind of industrial process or usage of technology like vehicles. There's also other projects from the ERA with respect to even cleaner concrete. Imagine that. I never thought concrete would be cleaner than what it is already. But it's one of those things that cement itself is approximately 8% of the world's carbon emissions. And when you look at various companies like Carbon Cure, which is a Canadian company, they have developed a technology, which you see to the right here, that can be dealing with producing cleaner concrete, which makes sense because concrete is found everywhere, on our roads, you know, pathways, you name it. There's also methane detection technologies that deal with, methane with the CH4. That with respect to methane, how can we capture such gases? And that's the area of carbon capture. Okay, there are various initiatives going on there. You can see the funding towards various projects, 183 projects to date from the ERA. And this was an agency created about 10 years ago. And so right now the funding is in and around $607 million. Okay, and the estimated GHG reductions, which is a difficult number to digest because these are just estimates, is quite large. Okay, when you look at the areas of focus for this provincial agency, remember this is an oil and gas province primarily, but we're moving towards renewables. We're actually making things easier for the carbon emission targets to be reached, okay? That means cleaner oil and gas. A lot of people, this is a very controversial thing because a lot of people say we shouldn't have oil and gas. But the thing is, we have an industry that is still heavily based in that. We still drive our cars. I talk about renewables, but I'm still filling up fuel in my car, okay? So we're not there yet exactly, but we're moving towards that future. And you can see here, there's various types of initiatives that the ERA focuses on with respect to even biomass. They're heavily involved in biomass as well. And you can see low carbon industrial processes. That's the key thing. We can't shut down our industries, but what we can do is utilize technology to integrate it with cleaner sources of generation. Algae is a big part, okay? Algae actually, which exists pretty much everywhere, when you look at a lake or pond, you'll see algae. You can use that algae to generate energy. University of Alberta is involved in that research. There is your project value. And there are other examples of renewables that are supported by the ERA with respect to wave energy or ocean tidal energy, okay? And there's a company in Calgary dealing with that. The ERA projects, for example, NMAX is involved in, large-scale demonstrations of solar and battery storage. And so this is a good example of where you have a gas plant or a refinery that is using various forms of renewable energy. That's a further example of an integration of renewables with the fossil fuel based industry. Okay, so these are tremendous impacts on the reduction targets I was talking about. And when you look at other agencies like Alberta Innovates, that's another provincial agency that deals with various emerging technologies towards commercialization. Scalability is key here. How can we scale at a large level all of these new initiatives? They sound good, but are they actually good? Can they be achievable? So again, you look at this agency dealing with biofuels with respect to waste management, okay? So this is up in Edmonton there with Enerkem involved, and you can see that they have specific goals in mind to reach based on the statute or statutes that I have shown you. And then of course, we see this every day, okay? In Calgary and various Canadian cities and around the world, we are developing technologies to use the e-scooter. How many of you have used the e-scooter? Has anyone used that? And more importantly, how many of you have fallen off it when you were using it? Anyways, I've seen a lot of that. So you have these people zipping around town with these new companies that have emerged with e-scooters. Can you replace the vehicle? Well, it's difficult. We're used to the vehicle, but many people, especially in the downtown cores, are using it, okay? And as you can see here, there are, even in Calgary, we have bylaws for e-scooters that have become law. They have become part of our municipal bylaws. And they, as you can see here, this is an image from downtown Calgary where bike lanes and e-scooter lanes have been devoted now to what used to be just for vehicles, okay? And of course, a lot of people have adapted to that. We see that every day now. But Calgary bylaws actually show you what you can and cannot do with respect to being fined. This is subject to regulation as well. And this is all under the Alberta Traffic Safety Act, which has been amended many times to fit the needs of these types of technologies like e-scooters. If you go to Seton Mall in Southeast Calgary, you'll see the beginnings of electric vehicle stations now. There's only one here, but that's about to expand, okay? These are, of course, newer malls, newer initiatives, but you can see that electric vehicles are coming up. And when you look at, this is from Kubi Energy, when you look at the various types of electric vehicle chargers, that's another emerging technology as well. And so it's one of those things that you can possibly earn revenue from EV chargers. Would you like to invest in EV chargers? Because they are going to be growing in these malls in the commercial areas. Okay, so to end things off, with respect to my thoughts, well, I have been kind of indicating what my thoughts are throughout the presentation, and thank you for listening, of course. But I feel that Alberta is really moving heavily into renewables. It has been for a long time, actually, but the rate of change is so quick now that people can't keep up with it. And it's not just a trend anymore. We are scaling up greener measures with specific sustainability projects and targets. The targets are the key here. If you don't set a target, then you don't know what you're doing. You have to have some kind of a discipline in the planning process. We are dealing with energy waste. We're dealing with increasing demands for electricity. Our population is growing and infrastructure is aging. Electricity infrastructure is aging. And so we have to advance in some way to innovate not only the entire industry, but also the transportation industry, which is huge, okay? With respect to opportunities to export technology, products and services, Canadian companies are exporting renewable energy very much like the European companies, which used to dominate in that area, Germany, Denmark, those kind of countries. Those countries were very good at exporting wind turbines and whatnot. Now Canada is doing it. United States is doing it. Our local businesses, domestic businesses are doing it. And that's also another indication that we can profit, we can actually progress meaningfully with respect to our economy. These are opportunities for investment, these are opportunities for employment, and these are opportunities for creating environments so that we can reach those low emission targets, okay? Energy storage and renewable hydrogen are things to look for. And if you want to read more about that, then I would encourage you to read the legal literature about it, okay? And of course, the scientific literature. But we need to understand that we are integrating with fossil fuel-based economy, which we're still living in. This is not a thing of the past. It's still here. The question is, how can we further integrate renewables? And how can we streamline the bureaucracy, the red tape, which is something I always indicate to people that we need to streamline the regulatory framework so we can get things going faster and avoid the red tape. Okay, there are many different things that can be done to make things better and brighter. And with that, I conclude my presentation.